Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition. Great to have you with us on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Line in the sand time tonight, about 4 hours from now, when the Nittany Lion basketball team takes on Minnesota. It started out 0-2, got off to a great start in the first half against Michigan State. Couldn't have played any better, led 47-40 over the fifth-ranked team of the country. The last 60 minutes of basketball have not been pretty for Penn State. They need at home tonight to get a win against Minnesota. This isn't a beauty contest. This isn't like, hey, played really great, but you need to win the game. I don't care how ugly it gets. They need to win it tonight. They have aspirations of doing something special with this conference season. I think it really has to begin tonight. Am I putting too much pressure on tonight's game? No, but I'm being realistic about tonight's game. Can you be 0-3 in the Big Ten with two of them being home losses? I'm just trying to be realistic here. And it's a team that they can beat. I know Minnesota's 12-3, but most of that's been accumulated at home. Typical of Minnesota basketball as to how they handle the non-conference season. It's smart on their part. Now, I'm not putting them down what they're doing. I'm saying it's smart. But they also don't have a lot of situations of going into somebody else's house and playing a ball game. So that is that's what's on the docket tonight at 7, airtime set for 6:30 this evening. Coaching search continues. We're going to get more into that, obviously. Dave Joyner saying yesterday that they're on track, and we'll talk to you about on track and what that means as well. Hall of Fame balloting as well. Kevin can't stand when there's not a unanimous person.
I just don't understand why there can't be, why there has never been one.
I don't understand. You're going to tell me Ted Williams, Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, they all come up and you don't vote for them?
Exactly.
Yeah, the guy that has the high, you know the guy who has the highest percentage ever?
Who's that?
Tom Seaver.
Really?
He has the highest percentage, like 98.7 or something like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not saying he's unworthy of it. I just, that's not the name I would have guessed.
Right. That's why I mentioned it. I knew it would not be one that would come to the front right away in terms of names.
I don't know if there's a feeling that nobody should be a unanimous selection, or that nobody should get in on a first ballot, or I always wondered what goes through the mind of the people that are voting and why they vote the way they do. I always thought that was interesting.
I don't know. There's some people that just feel that way. To me, you throw a name, like take for example Greg Maddux. Is Greg Maddux, to me, the greatest pitcher of all time? No. Are there pitchers that are much better than Greg Maddux in my career where if I had Game 7 of the World Series, I'd rather hand them the ball? Yeah, of course. But would I vote for him for the Hall of Fame? Absolutely I would. I absolutely would vote for him for the Hall of Fame. Would have no hesitation in doing it. Even though I think there are guys better, he's certainly one of the best ever, in my opinion. Is he the best? No. Is he the ball guy to give the ball in Game 7 of the World Series to? No. But he's a guy that I would vote into the Hall of Fame because I think he's outstanding. Cubs, Braves, whatever. I thought he's a fabulous pitcher.
Even Nolan Ryan didn't get any higher than Tom Seaver, though. Or Cal Ripken.
Yeah, but Nolan Ryan's interesting. You look at the early part of Nolan Ryan's career, you know, when he didn't have the he had much better control in the last, pick a number, 10 years of his career compared to the first 10 years of his career. First 10 years of his career, awesome strikeout guy, but also walked a lot of guys. Okay, that's why, you know, and didn't play for the greatest teams, but it took him a little while to really settle in where he became a complete pitcher in his career. If you were to ask me which guy I'd hand the ball to in the seventh game of the World Series, I might have picked Seaver. Now, you're talking about apples and oranges, greatness versus greatness, but I probably would pick Seaver.
You know, when you look at the percentages of voting, and you know I'm a big Mike Schmidt fan. That's the reason I was a Phillies fan and still am. he actually got a higher percentage than Babe Ruth. He didn't hit as many home runs as Babe Ruth, but he had a higher percentage than Babe Ruth.
And the voters changed, though. I mean, that's the original class. The original class, Babe Ruth was not the highest vote getter. Ty Cobb was.
Ty Cobb, right. He got all but four votes.
Yeah, you just don't know. I just think that there's certain people that the name comes up and you go, yep, next. I mean, where it, like the decision-making process is one of those, oh, I saw the name he's in. Okay? There's certain guys that have to fall into that category. Mike Schmidt would be one of them. Name comes up. Okay, Schmidt's up there. Boom, check mark. Okay, well, let's think hard about some of these other guys. All right, we have a lot more of that to talk about today. We're in the Sunbury Motor Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Up next, Inside Penn State Athletics with head coach Patrick Chambers, courtesy of Learfield Sports.
The Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915. Sunbury Motor Company has over 300 new Fords and over 100 new Hyundais that must be sold now. Get savings up to $11,000 during the January inventory liquidation event at Sunbury Motor Company. Liquidation means vehicles need to fly off the lot as quickly as possible, and Sunbury Motors will do what it takes to earn your business now. See all of the great deals on new Fords and Hyundais now, because time is of the essence, and if you wait too long, the new Ford or Hyundai you've had your eyes on will be in someone else's driveway. At Sunbury Motor Company, they never pressure you into buying a vehicle you don't want or that's out of your price range. They want to make sure you're getting the best possible deal with the best possible service before, during, and after the sale. This is the time to buy that new Ford or Hyundai, and this is the place. Stop at Sunbury Motor Company now while the selection's at its best. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at SunburyMotors.com.
He was all panicked about having to do the first couple minutes solo, and of course, I had to break off all my social engagements to make sure that I was here for you.
Thanks. Appreciate that. That's nice of you.
Welcome.
Social engagements. I had tea with...
I had tea with Chambers. It was...
Tea well with Chambers. Done. That sounds like the new pregame show. Tune in tomorrow for Tea with Chambers.
You know, but something I brought up to him in the pregame, in the first question, I asked him, I said, look, one of the toughest things to have happen is when you lose a tough game, that there's a carryover and suddenly one loss becomes two or three losses because of the carryover. So did the Princeton game do that to you? And he said they certainly lost confidence after that game. They've got to regain it. This is a line in the sand game tonight. And it's a game that they need to win this game tonight. Because if you can win this game and then double up and win Saturday, now you're back to 500 in the Big Ten, and now you've got a whole different feel on the conference season. Because the one thing you need to do in a conference season that is so important is that you need to hold serve when you're playing at home, and then you break serve and you can pick up a couple on the road. Well, their first one at home was Michigan State. They led the game at halftime, but still could have won the game. Didn't play well at all in the second half. Then they lost to Illinois. All right. So that happens. So now you're sitting there at 0-2, and your next two are here. And with the next two being here, you've got to get it done. Simple as that. And that's tonight. Now, you have high school basketball tonight.
That's right. Shikellamy Shamokin on WKOK.com.
And, of course, a lot of people want to know about the coaching search. It's now Wednesday. I know privately they wanted this thing wrapped right around today, tomorrow. and they may still get there. Now, the latest name that has surfaced goes back to the call we had yesterday. The latest name that has surfaced is Greg Roman. He has interviewed. Roman interviewed earlier in the week. He is also interviewed for the Redskins job. He's 41 years of age, had been the offensive coordinator at Stanford, and then followed Jim Harbaugh to the NFL, where he's been the OC of the 49ers. Single most impressive thing I saw last year involving him was when Alex Smith got hurt, Colin Kaepernick was installed as the quarterback, and when they did, he changed some things as to what they do offensively. And that was impressive to me, to fit the offense to the individual you had at the moment running it. That showed me a lot. Now, he'd been an offensive coordinator one other time, by the way, before Stanford. He was the OC of Holy Spirit High School in New Jersey. He was in between jobs in 2008. So he went back to his old high school, his high school alma mater, and he coached. Helped him out. It's kind of cool.
The other thing I thought that was interesting today, if you believe what you read, looks like there might be a delay in Franklin interviewing with the Redskins.
Look, I go back. Vanderbilt has money. This is not a Little Sisters of the Poor operation.
And they're spending it. And they're spending it on their program.
Which is fine. That's fine. But they need upgrades to begin with anyway. But the difference between a Vanderbilt and a Penn State is that at Penn State, I'm sure there's got to be a feeling that you are competing for championships. You're competing for your division. You're competing for the Big Ten title and then getting into a BCS bowl game. You're competing for that at Penn State. You have the resources at Penn State to do that. At Vanderbilt, you are still Vanderbilt. You're competing with South Carolina, Florida, okay, Georgia. I mean, those are the teams on your side that you're competing with. Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, South Carolina, Kentucky. It's a tough road. And Missouri. It's a tough road.
You know, this might be the busiest day we've had in months because we have the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame ballot. We have news out of Philadelphia that Wheels and Sarge are out as Phillies broadcasters. We'll probably talk about that. Johnny Manziel is entering the draft. Not that that's going to surprise anybody. And not to mention, oh, yeah, by the way, Penn State's hiring a football coach. So it's an entertaining day. It should spark a lot of conversation today.
Well, we have Donnie Collins and Josh Moyer today. We're going to stay on track on the Penn State football coaching thing. Tom Glavin, Greg Maddux, and Frank Thomas made it. You okay with that, Kev?
Listen, I just follow along intently. There's a lot of stuff going on. I'm excited.
I'm saying, are you okay with the Hall of Fame balloting?
Oh, am I okay with the Hall of Fame balloting? Yeah. Not quite. I think there's a name missing.
What name? Is Jerome Bettis doesn't play baseball?
Nah, I know. I Biggio. 0.2 of a percentage point short.
Biggio actually missed by 2 votes.
Yeah.
That's a shame. That's an absolute shame. 2 votes. Three, gotta tell you, it's gonna be an Atlanta Braves celebration because Bobby Cox is going in too.
Yay.
I know my Uncle Dave is thrilled because the Glavins live on his street in Billerica. He's known the Glavins for a long time.
Oh, I love the Braves.
They love you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hope everyone's doing well today. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Hall of Fame, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, Frank Thomas. Kevin wanted me to write in the name of Jerome Bettis. I was like, I want
him in some Hall of Fame anyway. You know, if it ain't going to be the NFL, putting him in something. I feel bad for Biggio. I mean, I know it's only his second year, but he's like two votes away from making
two votes. That's bad.
It's like, can I buy a vote somewhere? Was there somewhere I could have at least talked somebody into it?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of names on this list that, you know, and I'll tell you right now, it's his last year on there, but Jack Morris?
Yeah, there's no reason.
Tell me Jack Morris isn't a Hall of Famer? Cut me a break.
Do you know what the argument, well, you know what the argument is with Jack Morris. He was on successful teams. That's why his records were so good.
He was on successful teams because he was good.
That's exactly right. Doesn't that have something to do with the success?
I mean, fine. I mean, it's... Okay, then I guess that you're just all trying to justify why Ernie Banks is in. He was good on unsuccessful teams.
I mean, let's punish a talented pitcher that won a lot of games because he had teams that supported, that gave him run support.
I mean, look, you know, the first eight postseason games he pitched in, what did he do? He won seven of them. He was 7-1. He ended up 7-4. The last postseason he was in, he ended up 0-3 with Toronto. So he's 7-4 in the postseason. Money was on the table with Detroit, Minnesota. He pitched brilliantly. And to me, when you have to sit there and you have to really parse between candidates, to me that's one of them that swings it one way or the other for a guy. You know, what did you, you know, in the postseason when everything counted and you're facing the best lineup? How'd you do? I mean, look, I mean, you want to know why you saw Wainwright, Waka, Lester, Lackey, why their performances were all so impressive in the World Series? Look at the depth of the lineups they were facing. That was not the San Diego Padres, where you get to the sixth inning, you're like going, feeling good. I'm breezed through this part. Feeling good. You don't do that when you get to the postseason, because the reason these teams are in there are exactly the reason outlined on Jack Morris. You're on successful teams with deep lineups. That's what happens. All right. Let's bring in Donnie Collins now from the Scranton Times Tribune, who did a very thoughtful piece on Mike Munchak. Donnie, welcome. Great to have you with us.
Not too bad, and I agree totally on Jack Morris.
It's game seven. Okay? Yeah. Take the ball.
The winningest pitcher of a decade.
Yeah. Take the ball. All right? That's the kind of guy I want to hand the ball to and just take my chances after that.
The most important thing to me in a pitcher is how to be a win. I mean, and I know the win stat is such a... It's not valued as much anymore as maybe it was back in that day, but... Mm-hmm. Man, Jack Morris won more than anybody in the 80s. Jack Morris pitched the greatest game I've ever seen pitched in 1991 against a guy who pitched one of the five greatest games I've ever seen pitched on the same night. I mean, that was such a classic game. I know these writers don't want to base it on one game, but, you know, that one night, mm-hmm. you know, with the whole career judged on it, I think that's a Hall of Fame guy. That's one of the best pitchers of a generation.
I completely agree with that. Completely agree with it. All right, you wrote a story on Mike Munchak. Give us a little background on the story. And you know, a lot of people talk about Mike's Penn State background, Donnie. But as I've told people, I haven't been around Mike myself in 30 years because he's been in the pros the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, I have. You know, being that Mike's from Scranton, I've had the occasion to be around Mike quite a bit, and you know, I was on the Mike Munchak Hall of Fame beat in 2001 for about 4 or 5 months, so I did get to know Mike pretty well, and you know, the story that I wrote basically is I think he's the guy for this job at Penn State. I you know, if it comes down to picking the guy who's the safest pick, who has the best credentials, who has the the ability to project as a really good recruiter. I think that's Mike Munchak. And if, you know, every other guy, you know, James Franklin, anybody you're hearing about, there's a little bit of a drawback to them. And Mike's drawback is he doesn't recruit, or he hasn't recruited.
Right.
But my question is, who's to say he can't? You know, he's an engaging guy. He's got a plan. He details his plans very well. He articulates them. He gets people to buy into them. And isn't that what Bill O'Brien did? And when he got here, you know, the Penn State, who knew whether Bill O'Brien would be a really great recruiter? He didn't have that kind of reputation as far as I knew, and he developed it. So I think, you know, it really would behoove the board at this time, or not the board, but the committee, the search committee, to kind of project here who's going to be the best recruiter, who's going to be the guy who gives you that stability that the program needs right now. And to me, the signs point to Munchak, but you know, it's getting on 3 or 4 days past his interview, and you wonder, why haven't they pulled the trigger yet?
Well, and the other part, too, is that, you know, let's push it a little bit further, because, I mean, I'm not pushing one person or another person here, but when it comes to Mike Munchak, let's just talk about that candidacy, because that's the one you've concentrated on in today's column. You hire assistant coaches. The assistant coaches are the ones that go out, and they're the ones that recruit, and the head coach is the closer and projects the image of what the program is.
Yes, and that's what I wrote that today. I mean, you could equate it, you know, we were talking about pitching earlier, you could equate it to a guy like Larry Johnson being the starting pitcher, going out and doing laying the groundwork for you to win, and going out there and, you know, pitching the 7 innings and getting out there and being with the recruits and getting them, you know, being the first line of defense and you know, pitching your program and what you're about and what you project that prospect could be. But when it comes down to it, it's the head coach who sits there and says, well, here's why I think you're the best guy to come here. And who better to be that guy going into the living room than an NFL Hall of Famer? And, you know, people probably know this story, and I'm imagining it was pretty well publicized back in the 80s, but Mike Munchak was swayed to go to Penn State by Joe Paterno. He was going to go to another school. Joe Paterno wasn't going to have any of that. I don't know who the coach recruiting Mike was at the time. I forget. But Mike told that coach, you know, I'm not sure Penn State's the right place for me. Joe Paterno was at the house that night in Scranton, eating Italian food with the Munchaks, and that was it. That he sealed the deal. But you know, even Mike says of that story, you know, it was I was familiar with Penn State. It wasn't like Joe Paterno just showed up in my house and started talking about Penn State. I knew the program. I knew the plan. It was just something I needed to be sold on. And that would be Mike's job as a head coach, or anybody, or your James Franklin's, or anybody as head coach, just to finish the deal. You said it. They're the closer. And it's not as if you need a whole lot of experience on the road to do that job. You just need convictions and a plan. And Mike Munchak has convictions and a plan.
Here's something else. There's also a life experience part of this. So often now, what's the biggest decision that the highly talented college player has to make? It's the one that Johnny Manziel made today, you know, whether to leave for the NFL draft. People forget that Mike still had a year of eligibility remaining. And back then, the rule was you had to graduate and have your degree first. Then you could opt for the NFL draft if you still had eligibility remaining. Mike made that decision, right? And that's something where, when it comes to that kind of decision and somebody wants to leave early, well, Mike's already lived it and done it himself.
Yeah, Mike was kind of the Allen Robinson of the day. I mean, in a way, Mike had his degree, had everything, but he could have come back and played, and he didn't. He took an honest assessment from Joe Paterno, who told him, yeah, you're probably ready to make the next step. And that is it's an important thing for these recruits, you know, even especially the ones who are a really big deal and who have dreams of playing in the National Football League, legitimate dreams of playing in the National Football League, is that they want to have a coach who could tell them how to get there, who could be a legitimate guy to stand there and tell them how to get better, what they need to do, be honest with them in that regard. And Mike is an honest guy. I know it sounds like I'm standing here defending the guy from Scranton, and I'm from Scranton, and I work in Scranton, and all that. I'm really, I just, I, candidate for this job. And he would project at least as a pretty good recruiter slash, you know, evaluator of the talent that he's got, because he's been around this type of talent his whole life. And honestly, you know, he's worked with some great coaches who would have a lot of influence and insight on the way he would lead the program. If they don't hire Mike Munchak, I'm not going to, you know, lose sleep over it.
Of course.
It just amazes me that so many people just dismiss it as a boring choice or you know, a guy who hasn't recruited, so how could he possibly keep the program going in the direction it's going? I just think that's really short-sighted.
Well, and let's bring up something else that people might bring up that say it went in that direction. You know, and this is all speculation, of course. Only his 3 years with Tennessee, what his record was. Is there any team in the NFL that hovered around 500 that had a worse quarterback situation than Tennessee?
No.
I mean, seriously.
Somebody emailed me this morning and said, well, he couldn't settle on a quarterback. And I said, I responded to him, yeah, he settled on a quarterback. He just kept getting hurt.
Yes.
You can't play in the NFL without a quarterback. I mean, without a healthy quarterback, or without the same, you know, the continuity at that position. And they never had it. Locker was a project to begin with. And then he kept getting hurt. And then you're dealing with Ryan Fitzpatrick and the likes of, you know, career backups basically taking your snaps. It wasn't working out at the quarterback position for them. They were relying too much on Chris Johnson. And honestly, that was a team that didn't have a whole lot of talent. It was, you know, give me the, you know, Nate Washington and Kenny Britt at receiver. And, you know, defense was okay, but you know, nothing spectacular if you look at them name for name. And then you look at the record and you say, yeah, 22-26, and that's not that great a record. But for the players he had, I think Munchak did okay.
Well, they hovered around 500, and when you're in a quarterback-centric league like the NFL and you hover around 500 with the mess he had to deal with at that critical position, I give him a lot of credit for that. And I think a lot of people do give him credit for the stand that he took about his assistant coaches.
Yeah, I'll say this, though. I mean, it's easy to take that stand when you have a job out there that you might want.
Sure.
You know, and Penn State, you know, being out there, I think Mike looked at that and said, "Yeah, what's my better long-term option here? I could still be loyal to the people that have been loyal to me throughout my life, and I could pursue that job if this doesn't work out." So I think he saw that as a way to, yeah, you know, kind of maybe stay in the mix there with his assistant coaches and be loyal and stand by his convictions. But that said, you know, all we know is the facts, and the facts are they were going to offer Mike more money, more years on his contract, if he just got rid of a few of the guys on his coaching staff. But Mike didn't believe they were the problem, so he stood by them. And my response to Penn State fans is, does that sound like somebody you know?
Yeah. Yeah, sounds like, yeah, that sounds familiar. Donnie, thanks so much. Appreciate it for weighing in on the Hall of Fame ballot as well as on Mike Munchak as well. We appreciate the insight, because at least I think you've opened up some eyes as to the kind of individual that Mike is, because again, he hasn't been around here for 30 years.
Yeah, and that's what I was trying to do. It occurred to me that maybe I know him a little bit better than some of the people in State College do at this point. And, you know, I think it's important to not just dismiss him based on a 22-26 record with no quarterback in the Tennessee Titans. I think he's a better coach than that.
Donnie, thanks so much. Appreciate the time very, very much.
Anytime, Steve.
Donnie Collins, Scranton Times Tribune. Next half hour, Josh Moyer, ESPN.com, as we look at some of the candidates as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Josh Moyer, ESPN.com, in the next half hour on ESPN.com. Josh looked at four of the candidates whose names have been thrown out there. Now, we don't know exactly who really has and hasn't been interviewed. I mean, according to sources, Greg Roman, the 49ers offensive coordinator, interviewed earlier this week after the Green Bay-San Francisco game. He also allegedly interviewed for the Washington Redskins job. Roman is from New Jersey. He's 41 years of age. He's been in the NFL with Carolina, Houston. Then he was at Holy Spirit High School, which is his alma mater, 1 year as an offensive coordinator. And then got back into it with Stanford as the OC. And when Jim Harbaugh took the head coaching job of the 49ers, he then moved with him to the 49ers as the offensive coordinator. But he's a Jersey guy who had proclaimed 2 years ago that he would look at Penn State as a dream job. So I, whether that fits in or not, we'll see. But what Josh did in his article is he took the pros and cons of four names that have been primarily tossed out there: Al Golden, James Franklin, Mike Munchak, Larry Johnson. Then we'll all, and of course, obviously, I'll ask him about Greg Roman as well. But we'll talk about that article that he wrote in the next half hour. Penn State basketball tonight, Minnesota Jordan Center. Patrick Chambers and his team, it's a big week for them. This is one of those circle weeks. They want to get somewhere. This is going to be the week that jumpstarts it. Or not. And it starts tonight at 7. We're on at 6:30 on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Hall of Fame ballot today. Tom Glavine in. Greg Maddux, 97.8% of the vote. Highest percentage, eighth highest percentage ever. In Frank Thomas, most of his career with the White Sox, some with the A's, 521 home runs in his career in. And a 301 career average as well. I mean, he's a 500 home run guy with a 300 batting average. Craig Biggio misses by 2 votes. I think they need to waive the 10-guy rule. You can only vote for 10 guys. I think they need to waive that, get rid of that.
That's a good idea.
That, and I also think, because look, I mean, 3 got in max this time. The biggest class they've ever had for the Hall of Fame in terms of vote was actually the first one. In terms of the number of guys that made it in. They haven't had that many since. Everybody's, oh, there's so many. Hardly anybody's been voted into the Hall of Fame in the last 5 years. And that's because, in part, people have had trouble distinguishing as to what to do and not to do with the PED scandal. That's why you've had so few guys voted in. I'm not saying anything that's not the obvious. That is the reason why.
Now, you have one reporter whose name I can't think right now, but he says every year he's not voting for anybody that's played in the PED era. I don't think that's right either, but, I mean, that's his prerogative.
That's his prerogative. But I also think it needs to be opened up beyond the Baseball Writers Association of America.
It is kind of a club thing.
Well, no, I mean, no, these are great writers who cover, and they do it objectively and so forth. But look at, for example, you take a Vin Scully, a Milo Hamilton. The long list of guys that broadcast baseball on an everyday basis. Harry Callis, the late Harry Callis. I mean, you're not going to tell me he wouldn't be one of the better voters to have for the Hall of Fame when he was alive? Of course he would have. These guys see baseball every day. Every day they're around it, they see it. I mean, I think they ought to open that up as well and tap their knowledge, but that's only me.
By the way, a lot of fans interested to know that Mike Mussina in his first year got 20% of the vote, so he will stay on the ballot.
He stays on the ballot, and I think he's Hall of Fame worthy, to be honest with you. I think Mike Mussina, he's the kind of horse that got the ball and went out and pitched every single time.
Don Mattingly, I'm surprised that he got 8% of the votes in year 14, and that is not very good because he's only got 1 year left, and that doesn't bode well for that final year.
No, he has no shot. He's done.
You heard it here first.
Well, I don't think. I think even he knows he's done. Okay. I mean, I'm not telling anything Don Mattingly doesn't know, and he was a heck of a player in his era.
Is the bloody sock in the Hall of Fame?
Yes, it is.
But Curt Schilling is not.
No.
Yet.
216 wins in the regular season, but 11-2 in the postseason. Jack Morris, 251 wins regular season, 7 postseason. I'll tell you right now, if I had Game 7 and I had a choice between Morris, Schilling, Glavine, and Maddux,
Maddox and Glavine will be the first two guys that eliminate. And I think they're Hall of Famers and deserve to be there. But I'd hand the Game 7 ball to either Morris or Schilling and not the other two. How about that?